to minute 154 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Howard Kasner, blogger, host of the Pop Art Podcast, and also a famous screenwriter and script consultant. Welcome back to the show, Howard.
From your lips to God's ears.
There you go. Why not give you a little bit of a push? You know, maybe some of our listeners, need someone to polish up their scripts. And
Right.
Now they'll know who to go to. I know that if I ever have one, I know I'm going to you first. So,
Thank you.
I'm far from that. it's easier to say that when you're not in the middle of writing a script. But
right.
Still. Minute 154 begins with Hiltz raising up his right arm and goes all the way till we see the waiter put the phone down and walks towards a number of customers. As we were discussing the last few days, reached the point where the most iconic moments of this movie have passed. Hiltz has made the jump over the first fence, unfortunately didn't make it over the second side of the fence, or the second row of fence, I guess you can say. And he's now been caught, and he's stuck in the middle of a lot of barbed wire, and manages to stand up, and now lifts his hands up, or at least one hand, he lifts up his right arm. You can see that he's clearly out of breath, but he still surrenders, knowing that there's nothing that he can do at this point. He has this very funny smirk on his face when this is happening.
Well, he has the Steve McQueen smirk,
He has this look on his face that, all right, you got me, but I'll be out again. Don't worry. Then we get a cut to a busy town, busy street. A lot of people, some people walking around. Do you know French, Howard?
Not too well. But
no, because we see.
I remember when he said something. I knew what they were saying.
I'm not actually at this point even concerned about when the characters are going to start speaking French. But for me, the first shot when we see the staff car, come across the bridge. So we see in the middle of the sidewalk, we see a place where they put up, there's all these advertising posters and stuff like that. On top it says VABE, Vabe.
Right.
I couldn't figure out what that is. It's not a word in French. It's not a word in German. I have absolutely no idea what that meant. So I thought maybe you'd have an idea.
No, I don't. I mean, it's not the name of the city or the name of the street.
Okay. All right. So.
Yeah.
So no, we see this is it seems like it's early morning or mid-morning. We see a few characters walking around. We see a guy on a bicycle driving away. We see a guy walking with a baguette under his arm, which I guess they threw that in to make everyone believe that we're actually in France right now. Because even though they filmed this in Germany.
Baguettes are big for breakfast.
Yes, exactly.
In France.
We see the staff car turn the corner, and it stops right in front of an outdoor cafe. Then we can see that it's called Suzette Cafe, probably named after someone that John Sturges knew or something like that, because apparently there is no real Suzette Cafe in this area or where it's supposed to be.
No, but it's probably named after Crepe Suzette.
It's very
possible. Probably serve crepes.
I wouldn't know. I couldn't tell you. And the staff car shows up. We see three German officers and a driver. And this is actually filmed next to the Lechholt Bridge in Füssen. And this was filmed in Germany. The three officers get out of the car, one after the other. And then the driver drives off, unfortunately for the officers, but thankfully for the story. Then we see the waiter just standing there, leaning against the counter, and then he looks up, and it seems as if he has a cigarette in his hand or something like that that he apparently is putting out, even though it's very strange. And then he looks at his watch, and he places his watch in his pocket, and then we get another shot of him where he's once again stamping out a cigarette, meaning that he's actually just done the same movement twice, depending on the shots.
That could be an edit.
Yeah, this is this is definitely a continuity error.
Yeah.
There's no question about that, because then he once again looks at his watch and places it in his pocket. So we get to see him do that twice from different angles, one after the other. And then walks over to the table with the officers, looks over at someone staring at a newspaper. Again, my French is terrible. So I will spare everyone for have to listen to me say what he says in French. And he goes, "Hello, gentlemen, how's it going? Things are going well." And the response is, and then he says, "As usual, you want three Pernod, is it not?" And the Germans nod and respond that that's what they want. And then the waiter walks back towards the counter and says, "Three Pernod, Papa," which is interesting because if you look at these characters, it doesn't look like the one behind the counter is old enough to be his father. It's borderline. I don't know if you can really, you know, agree that this is... No, I would say they both look around the same age. They probably both look like they're in their 30s. That would be my guesstimation. And then then the guy behind the counter decides to go, or goes to begin to fill their order. So then we get to see reading a paper in French. And if you look at the headline of on the paper, once again, I'm going to spare everyone with my French rendition of things. It basically says that there's a great resistance of the enemy. And then there's another headline in there that says large bombardments on the harbor. And then we get to see that they lower the paper. And we actually get to see who we're dealing with here. We're dealing with Sedgwick, played by James Coburn. Now, to me, it's very interesting because when I read the original script, Sedgwick is actually one of the characters that gets caught, and he's interrogated like Cavendish, who we discussed a few weeks ago when he got caught. But here, we basically have and that the character that is in the cafe is someone by the name of Merivale, who I have not been able to figure out who he's supposed to be in the script, or who he turned into be in the end. Basically, a lot of things that he did were given to other characters. They switched things around, stuff like that. But Merivale is the character that Sedgwick basically is playing at this point. So I found it interesting that during the of the script rewrites, they made that big change. I mean, another big change they did was that Roger's name in the original script was Cyril instead of Roger. They were, I guess, trying to avoid using anything similar to the real name of Roger Bushell. You know, so they called him Cyril instead. So I found that interesting. I mean, have you done that in some of the scripts that you've written? Have you, like, started writing a particular character and then changed things and split that character's parts up among other characters and things like that?
Yes, well, if I want to get rid of a character.
If you want to get rid of him, for what reason? Because you have too many characters?
I would do that. Too many characters. It's having this many characters is slowing down the plot. It's getting in the way of forward momentum. And you realize that if you split up this character and give certain things to other people, it's a much smoother plot. You just have too many characters and it's getting in the way.
Yeah. As a screenwriter, do you think this movie has too many characters?
No, I think they cover them all fairly well. No, I'd have to say no. I think it, from that perspective, it works out fairly well. It doesn't really allow much depth for the characters, but you're not really looking for a lot of depth in these characters. You're just looking at
But the depth that they do give these characters is that each of them, you know, like in a good heist movie, each of them has their specialty, and you have to just connect the character to the specialty. But you don't know anything about their backstory. You don't know, you know, where they've been, what they've done. You only know what you see on screen. They say this is this character's job, and this is what he's going to do, and this is all we see them do.
And well, backstory isn't necessarily what I'm talking about. You can have depth of character without a lot of backstory. The example you give is all we know about in a heist film is their specialty. That would be a film that doesn't have much depth to the characters. If you see Rafifi, the Asphalt Jungle, things like that, you see characters of great depth. You actually, they come very, very, very much alive. These characters, they're okay, but they never really, on a scale of 1 to 10, they're probably around a 7.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Especially the British ones, you're saying.
Well,
based on what
actually,
we were talking about earlier this week.
It's amazing what a British accent does. For some reason, a British accent can make a character have a lot more depth than an American accent. Don't know why that happens. Don't know why that is. But all of a sudden, give someone a British accent and they come alive in a way that American accents don't.
And does it matter what type of American accent? I mean, would an accent of a cowboy or, you know, would that change it or something like that?
Yeah, working class accents are always the best in America. Bronx, Chicago, things of that nature are always things that give people an immediate background in depth. I mean, depth. Boston. I mean, even in
Boston
England.
Boston also, right?
Yeah, Boston. Cockney accents and accents like that are always more interesting than posh accents.
As long as you can actually understand what they're saying.
Well, sometimes it helps to have the closed caption on.
Yes, but that it's something that you need to make sure that you can actually understand without. I think that would be detrimental to a story if you can understand what the characters are saying. You know, when actually maybe that's not true, because if you think of the Usual Suspects, you know, you have Fenster, Fenster, right, where he's just mumbling along the whole time. Oh no, maybe not Fenster. Fenster's now I don't even remember which one it was. It was the one played by Benicio del Toro. Do you remember what his name was? I think Fenster was Kevin Pollak.
No, it's been so long since I've seen it. But. I used to be able to understand the accents a lot better than now. I think my hearing's gone, so it's always useful to have the closed caption on for British accents. But they probably do the same thing if they watch, like, what was the one, the crime series that took place in Boston, The Wire.
Baltimore.
Baltimore, yeah. I'm sure if they watched that, they said, oh, maybe we should turn on the closed caption. These are thick accents.
Yeah, so I just checked. It is Fenster. Benicio del Toro plays Fenster, and Kevin Pollak played Hockney.
Yeah.
That's the difference. But yeah, no, so he mumbled throughout the whole movie. Yeah. It always helped to have... It made for comic moments, but it still helps to be able to see on screen what he's saying, you know, with having the closed captions. You're right about that. Right, so at this point, we see Cedric in the cafe. Did you notice what he's eating?
I didn't really, but let me see.
Or what he ordered, basically.
I know he had a coffee. No. Yes. Actually, he has a pot there, so it might have been tea.
No, it looks like it's very dark. Maybe it was. Maybe he was having a
that's
hot chocolate.
Yes, that's probably hot chocolate because he has a pot there. You wouldn't really probably have a pot there for coffee. But hot chocolate, along with the dessert cake he's having, would be a better match.
Yeah, the coloring of the dessert cake is a little strange. It looks like it might have some mold on it. or maybe those are raisins. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I'm trying to get back to that. Yeah, there it is. No, it's. I think it actually looks like cranberries.
It could be. Oh, it's close. Raisins, cranberries.
Yeah.
You know, they're all the same. Yeah. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. Again, the location shooting of this film is just amazing. I mean, you see the river behind him. You see the trees, and you can see behind that, buildings. I mean, it's just done really well. It looks so realistic. I mean, obviously, it was filmed in Houston. It was a real place. But still, the choice of where to shoot these scenes.
Do you know where this was supposed to take place in France? I think it has to be, I think, southern France. The place where the Germans had the least authority for a long period of time. I mean, they took over all of France, but then the Vichy controlled more the bottom half, because he's reading this paper that I can't imagine anybody in Paris would dare read out in public.
The question is whether he knows what... I don't think he knows what he's reading either.
Well, it says liberation and all sorts of things on it. No, I think it makes sense, because you want to head toward southern France, Vichy territory, in order to get across into Spain.
Because, right. Now, according to the original script, this takes place in Toulouse, which is southern France. You are correct.
Yeah.
I,
Yeah. Yeah, it all just seems very southern.
I personally don't know if that is part... You're saying all southern France was Vichy controlled?
Well, Vichy were the French...
Who cooperated, right.
Yeah, for a long time, because, you know, that's a lot of soldiers you'd have to cover all of France. So they allowed the Vichy to take care of the southern part of France for a very long time. So if you actually wanted out of France, you would go down to Marseille, you would go down to places like that where there was far fewer Germans. If you're Jewish, you would head south if you could to get away from the Germans. Now, at some point, the Germans did crack down. They really cracked down. But yeah, if you were in the south, it was more Vichy-controlled than German.
Well, that's basically, is that why, you know, Laszlo escapes to Casablanca?
Not exactly, because that's totally made up. No one would go to Casablanca if they were trying to get out of, if they were trying to get to Lisbon. So, yeah, that's just a made up thing that Casablanca was never really the hub of people fleeing. I mean, I thought it was strange when they showed the map and you go from France to Morocco and to Casablanca, and I'm going, well, gee, why don't you just go over to Spain? It's a lot closer, you know. And once you get to Spain, you're pretty much home free. Then you're Portugal, and you can get out.
But that's if Franco would let you in.
Well, if you're going to sneak your way in, yeah. If you're not going to sneak your way in, but I don't think Franco at that point was stopping people from coming through Spain to get away at that point.
Okay, could be.
Yeah. And I'm not a historian aspect. I'm talking like I'm an history expert, and I'm not really. So
you're a movie history expert. So there you go. you're able to prove to me that Casablanca makes no sense, despite you know, the fact that it's considered one of the best movies ever.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It is. I'm not arguing that. that's not the way history works. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be real. It just needs to be enjoyable.
Believable.
How's that?
Right.
So Sedgwick pulls the paper down a little bit, and then he opens the paper, which I find really funny because he basically has a 4-page newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other pages there. I guess they were sparingly printing papers at the time that were saying bad things about the Germans. Or.
Oh, yeah, if you had an underground newspaper of any kind, it wasn't going to be big.
Right, but if you have an underground newspaper, you shouldn't be reading it in public, as you stated.
Yeah, that I do find that even a little strange, even if it is southern France and Vichy and everything. And the Germans don't even pay any attention to it. But I just love, though, the looks that the waiter is making, because he knows something, you know. This is all planned. Everything that happens is planned.
Except for Sedgwick being there.
Being there. And he's looking at him and saying, oh, you know, what are we going to do? What is, you know, how is this going to work out? And we haven't got to the phone call yet, so I won't say anything.
Right. So then the phone rings near the waiter, and he picks up the phone. He talks for...
And that's my favorite part. This is like my favorite part of the movie.
And he just says, oui. That's all he answers. And then... Yes. Puts the phone down, and then starts walking towards the three Germans with their drinks. And that's how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Well, I think that... I think this waiter is incredibly clever. You know, the resistance is calling him to say, is everything okay? Can we come by? And he says, oui, yes, it's all set up. And then he uses the phone as a way to get James Coburn out of the way. He tells him, oh, the phone call's for you. And Coburn's going, for me?
Right. You know, we can talk about that tomorrow when we get to it. The phone has only just rung, and he put down the phone.
Oh, I guess you're right. Yes, I am getting a little ahead of things. Yeah.
My favorite part is the next part. We need to keep the listeners in suspense until tomorrow when we're actually able to discuss it.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I just like the way the waiter and the way he looks. I think it's well directed, the way the waiter acts.
Okay.
Because he's making these interesting looks, and he's calculating in his head, and something's not quite right. you know.
Exactly. Do you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Again, Howard Kastner, C-A-S-N-E-R. Facebook is easiest, along with my Facebook screenplay consultation page. Find me, my blog is Rantings and Ravings, and you can find Pop Art on a lot of streaming channels, but especially on Apple, Podomatic, and Anchor.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on a new podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. You can visit our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is greatescapemxm, and our Facebook group is The Cooler. So, Howard, do you want to come back tomorrow to finish off the week with us?
As long as you don't
get a phone call along the way. How's that?
Yes. Sounds great. All right.
Well, until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.